Fred stopped. And in one terrible moment, he realized that everything James said was true. James squeezed his eyes shut for a moment. Then he stood. I should be going.
James, please don't,
Fred whispered, and grabbed James's hand. I can't do this anymore. I can't keep telling you how to live. I've almost forgotten how to do it myself. James hesitated. Listen, that culinary instructor at Orion, Steve, the one who comes into your store and talks recipes with you, you should get to know him better. He likes you. Fred let his hand drop, and he looked as if he'd been punched in the stomach. Without another word, James walked slowly away, so tall and thin and stiff-legged that he looked like a circus performer on stilts. Fred was left to watch him go. I used to overhear the checkout girls in the break room, Fred finally said softly, to no one in particular. Evenell wondered if he even remembered she was there. I used to think they were such silly teenagers. Believing the worst hurt in the world was when you couldn't let go of someone who had stopped loving you. They always wanted to know why. Why didn't the boy love them anymore? They said it with such anguish. Without another word, Fred turned and walked away. Sydney sat alone on one of Grandma Waverly's old quilts. Bay had made a few friends in the children's area, and Sydney had spread a quilt near their families so Bay could play with the kids in the violet-blue dusk. Emma was sitting in a cushioned lawn chair with some other people. Sydney didn't know. Hunter John was nowhere to be seen. Emma would sneak glances at Sydney every once in a while, but otherwise made no attempt to communicate with her. It felt strange to be so close to her one-time friends, only to find them strangers now. Sydney was making new friends at the salon, but new friendships took time. History took time. Sydney watched Bay run around the green with a sparkler, but she turned when she saw someone approach from the right. Henry Hopkins walked to the edge of her quilt and stopped. He'd grown up to be a handsome man. Lots of blonde hair, cut close and practical, and tight muscles in his arms. The last she clearly remembered of Henry was laughing at him with her friends when he tripped and fell in the hallway in high school. He'd been a gangly mess in his youth, but he had a quiet dignity that she appreciated so much when they were little kids. They grew apart as they grew up, and she didn't know exactly why. She just knew she'd been horrible to him once she got everything she thought she wanted in high school. She didn't blame him for not wanting to talk to her when she went to the Hopkinses' table that afternoon. "Hi," Henry said. Sydney couldn't help but smile. "He speaks. Do you mind if I sit here with you?" "As if I could refuse a man who gives me free ice cream," Sydney said, and Henry lowered himself beside her. "I'm sorry about before," Henry said. "I was surprised to see you. I thought you were mad at me." Henry looked genuinely confused. "Why would I be mad?" "I wasn't very nice to you in high school." "I'm sorry. We were such good friends when we were little." "I was never mad at you. Even today I can't pass a set of monkey bars and not think of you." "Ah, yes," Sydney said. "I've had many men tell me that." He laughed. She laughed. All was right. He met her eyes after they'd quieted, then said, "So, you're back."
"I'm back."
"I'm glad." Sydney shook her head. This was an unexpected turn to her day. "You are, quite possibly, the first person to actually say that to me." "Well, the best things are worth waiting for." "You don't stay for the fireworks?" Tyler asked, as Claire was boxing up the empty wine bottles. He'd come up behind her, but she didn't turn around. She was too embarrassed to. If she turned around, she would become that deeply disturbed woman who couldn't handle a man being interested in her. As long as she kept her back to him, she was the old Claire, the self-contained one, the one she knew before Tyler introduced himself and Sydney moved in. Sydney and Bay had already spread out a quilt, waiting for it to get dark enough for the fireworks. Claire noticed earlier that Henry Hopkins had joined them, and she was still trying to get her mind around it. Henry Hopkins liked her sister.
This is the end of disc number 4. Please insert disc number 5. This is disc number 5.
Sydney and Bay had already spread out a quilt, waiting for it to finally get dark enough for the fireworks. Claire noticed earlier that Henry Hopkins had joined them, and she was still trying to get her mind around it. Henry Hopkins liked her sister. Why did it bother her? Why did Fred helping Evenell bother her? Her edges were crumbling like border walls, and she was feeling terribly unprotected. The worst possible time to deal with Tyler. "I've seen the show before," she said, her back still to him. "It ends with a bang. Now you've ruined it for me. Can I help you?" She stacked the boxes and took two of them, planning to get the other two on her second trip. "No." "Right," Tyler said, picking up the boxes. "So I'll just grab this." He followed her across the green to her van, which she'd parked on the street. She could feel his stare on the back of her neck. She never realized how vulnerable short hair could make a person. It exposed places that were hidden before. Her neck, the slope of her shoulders, the rise of her breasts. "What are you afraid of, Claire?" he asked softly. "I don't know what you're talking about." When they reached the van, she unlocked the back and put her boxes in. Tyler came up beside her and set his boxes beside hers. "Are you afraid of me?" "Of course I'm not afraid of you," she scoffed. "Are you afraid of love?" "Oh, the arrogance," she said, as she strapped the boxes in to keep the bottles from breaking as she drove. "I refuse your advances, so it must be because I'm afraid of love." "Are you afraid of a kiss?" "No one in their right mind is afraid of a kiss." She closed the back of the van and turned around, finding him closer than she expected. "Too close. Don't even think about it," she said, sucking in her breath, her back plastered against the van as he stepped closer still.
"It's just a kiss," he said, moving in.
And she didn't think it was possible for him to be so close and not actually touch her.
"Nothing to be afraid of, right?"
He put one hand on the van, near her shoulder, leaning in. She could leave, of course. Just scoot away and turn her back on him again. But then he lowered his head, and up close she could see the tiny spiderweb lines around his eyes, and it looked as if his ear had been pierced at one time. Those things told stories about him. Storytellers' stories, spinning yarns, lulling her into listening. She didn't want to know so much about him, but one tiny bit of curiosity, and she was done for. Slowly, his lips touched hers, and there was a tingling, warm, like cinnamon oil. So this was all there was to it? This wasn't so bad. Then his head tilted slightly, and there was this friction. It came out of nowhere, streaking through her body. Her lips parted when she gasped in surprise, and that's when things really got out of control. He deepened his kiss, his tongue darting into her mouth, and a million crazy images raced through her mind. They didn't come from her. They were images from him. Nakedness and legs twining, holding hands, having breakfast, growing old. What was this mad magic? Oh, God, that it felt so good! Her hands were suddenly everywhere, touching, grabbing, pulling him closer. He was pressing her against the van, the force of his body nearly suspending her in air. It was too much. She was surely going to die, yet the thought of stopping, of actually breaking contact with this man, this beautiful man, was heartbreaking. She'd wondered what a kiss from him would feel like, if her jumpiness, her restlessness would fade away. Or would he make it worse? What she found was that he actually absorbed it, like energy, and then he radiated it like a firestone, warming her. What a revelation. The whistles slowly invaded her senses, and she pulled back to see some teenagers walk by on the sidewalk, sucking their teeth and smiling at them. Claire watched them walk away over Tyler's shoulder. He wasn't moving. He was breathing heavily, each breath pressing against her breasts, which were suddenly so sensitive it was almost painful. "Let go of me," she said. "I don't think I can." She pushed at him and slid out from between him and the van. He fell forward against the van as if he had no strength to stand. She understood why when she tried to walk to the driver's side and nearly didn't make it. She was weak, like she hadn't eaten in days, like she hadn't walked in years. "All this from one kiss? If we ever make love, I'm going to need a week to recover." He talked of the future so easily. The images from him were so vivid, but she couldn't start this because then it would end. Stories like this always ended. She couldn't take this pleasure, because she would spend the rest of her life missing it, hurting from it. "Leave me alone, Tyler," she said as he pushed himself away from the van, his chest still rising and falling rapidly. "This never should have happened, and it's not going to happen again." She got in the van and sped away, jumping curbs and running stop signs all the way home. Chapter 9. More than a century ago, Waverleys were wealthy, respected people in town. When they lost their money on a series of bad investments, the Clarks were secretly overjoyed. The Clarks were wealthy landowners, with acres full of the best cotton and the sweetest peaches. The Waverleys weren't nearly as wealthy, but they were mysterious old money from down in Charleston, who built a showy house in Bascom and always held themselves better than the Clarks thought they should. When news of the Waverleys' poverty reached them, the Clark women danced a little dance in the secretive light of the half moon. Then, thinking themselves quite charitable, they brought the Waverleys woolen scarves riddled with moth holes and tasteless cakes made without sugar. They secretly just wanted to see how badly the floor needed polishing without the servants, and how empty the rooms looked with most of the furniture gone. It was Emma Clark's great-great-great-aunt Reese who took the apples from the backyard, and that started the whole thing. The Waverley women, their clothing mended, and their hair messy from trying to put it up without maids, wanted to show the Clarks their flowers, because tending the garden was the only thing they really had any success doing themselves. It made Reese Clark jealous, because the Clarks' garden could never compare. There were many apples around the garden, shiny and perfect, so she secretly filled her pockets and her reticule. She even stuffed some down her jacket. Why should the Waverleys have so many beautiful apples, apples they didn't even eat? And it was almost as if the apple tree wanted her to have them, the way they would roll to a stop at her feet. When she got home, she took the apples to the cook and told her to make apple butter. For weeks after, every single one of the Clark women saw such wonderful and erotic things that they began to get up earlier and earlier each morning just for breakfast. The biggest events in the lives of Clark women, it turned out, always involved sex, which could have come as no surprise to their frequently exhausted husbands, who spent and forgave too much because of this. But then, quite suddenly, all the apple butter was gone, and with it the erotic breakfasts. More was made, but it wasn't the same. Reese knew then that it had been those apples, the Waverley apples. She became insanely jealous, thinking the tree gave erotic visions to everyone who ate them. No wonder the Waverleys always seemed so happy with themselves. It wasn't fair. It simply wasn't fair that they got to have such a tree and the Clarks didn't. She couldn't tell her parents what she'd done. For anyone to know she'd actually stolen something, much less from a family so recently poor, would be mortifying. So she got out of bed in the middle of the night and crept to the Waverley house. She managed to pull herself up the fence, but her skirt got caught on the finials, and she fell. She ended up hanging upside down on the fence for the rest of the night, where she was discovered the next morning by the Waverleys. Her family was summoned, and with the help of Phineas Young, the strongest man in town, she was helped down and immediately sent away to live with her strict Aunt Edna in Asheville. It was there, 2 months later, that she had the most wonderful, passionate night of her life with one of the stable hands. It was exactly what she'd seen when she'd eaten the apple butter. She thought it was fate. She was even willing to put up with her unlikable Aunt Edna to keep up the incredible affair, but weeks later she was caught in the stables with him, and she was quickly married off to a stern old man. She was never happy or sexually satisfied again. She decided it was all the Waverleys' fault. And when she was an old woman, she made a point of visiting Bascom every summer, just so she could tell all the Clark children how horrible and selfish the Waverleys were to keep that magical tree all to themselves. And that resentment stuck in the Clark family, long after the reason faded away. The day after the 4th of July, Emma Clark Madison tried to use the time-honored Clark way of getting what she wanted. She and Hunter John made love that morning. Pillows knocked off the bed, sheets pulled from their corners. Had the radio not been on, the kids would surely have heard. He was exhausted and slap-happy afterward. So naturally, Emma tried to get him to talk about Sydney. She wanted him to think about how sexy Emma was, compared to how old Sydney looked in her plaid shorts yesterday, which she had described to him in detail. But Hunter John refused to talk about Sydney at all, saying she had nothing to do with their lives anymore. He got up and went to the bathroom to shower, and Emma bit her lip tearily. She was distraught, so she did the only thing she could think of. She called her mother and cried.
"You did what I said. And you kept Hunter John away from the 4th of July celebration. That was good,"
Ariel told her.
"Your mistake was in bringing Sydney up with Hunter John this morning."
"But you said to make him compare us," Emma said, lying in bed and hugging a pillow after Hunter John had gone to work. "How can I do that without bringing her up?"
"You're not paying attention, sugar. I set that up so he could compare Sydney to you when Sydney was serving and you were the hostess. Just that once. Don't keep doing it, for heaven's sake."
Emma's head was spinning. She'd never doubted her mother's considerable knowledge in the ways of men, but this seemed so complicated. How could she keep this up? At some point, Hunter John was going to suspect something.
"You haven't let Hunter John anywhere near Sydney since he went to see her at the White Door, have you? That was another big mistake."
"No, Mama. But I can't keep track of him all the time. When do I trust him? When do I know?"
"Men are the most untrustworthy creatures on God's green earth,"
Ariel said.
"This is entirely up to you. You have to work to keep him. Buy something new and skimpy just for him. Surprise him."
"Yes, Mama."
"Clark women don't lose their men. We keep them happy."
"Yes, Mama." "Where is Bay?" Sydney asked, walking into the kitchen on the first Monday since the 4th of July. It was her day off. "I thought she was helping you." "She was, but she heard a plane overhead and ran out to the garden. Happens every time." Sydney laughed. "I don't understand it. She was never this crazy about planes before." Claire was at the kitchen island making chocolate cupcakes for the Havishams, who lived four doors down. They were hosting their grandson's pirate-themed 10th birthday. Instead of a cake, They wanted 6 dozen cupcakes with something baked inside, a child-size ring or a coin or a charm. Claire had made candy strips from thin shoots of angelica from the garden and was going to make a tiny X on the frosting of each cupcake, like the sign on a treasure map. Then she was going to put tiny cards on toothpicks with riddles as to what was buried within. Sydney watched Claire with the frosting. "So when is this gig?" "The Haversham's birthday party? Tomorrow. I'll be glad to take off work to help you." Claire smiled, touched by Sydney's offer. "I've got this one covered, thanks." Bay came in at that moment, and Sydney laughed. "Oh, honey, you don't have to wear that brooch Evenelle gave you every day. She doesn't expect you to." Bay looked down at the brooch she'd pinned to her shirt. "But I might need it." "Ready to go for our walk to see the school?"
"Will you be okay without me, Aunt Claire?" Bay asked.
"You were a great help today. Thank you. But I think I can finish up," Claire said. She was going to be sad when Bay started school in the fall. But then there would be afternoons to look forward to, when Bay got home from school and Sydney got home from work, and they'd all be together. She was happy having Sydney and Bay there with her. She wanted to focus only on that, not on how long it would last. She wasn't quite up to admitting that she still thought about how it was going to end. She thought about it every single day. "We won't be gone long," Sydney said.
"Okay."
Claire suddenly felt prickly, and she looked at the hair on her arm standing on end. Damn. "Tyler's about to come to the front door. Please tell him I don't want to see him." Sydney laughed as soon as there was a knock. "How did you know that?"
"I just knew."
"You know, Claire, if you ever want to talk..." "Still so many secrets. I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours." "Ditto!" Tyler and Bay waited together on the front porch swing. Tyler used his long legs to swing them high, and Bay laughed because it was so Tyler. He was easily distracted and ready to have fun. But Bay's mom said if he was ever concentrating on something not to bother him, that it was like not asking a person a question at dinner until they finished chewing. As they swung, Bay thought about her dream, the one of her in the garden. Things here weren't going to be perfect until she could replicate it exactly. But she couldn't figure out how to make sparkles on her face in the sun, and even though she'd taken notebooks out to the garden and held paper up to the wind, she could never quite get the sound of paper flapping right, either.
"Tyler," Bay said.
"Yes?"
"What kinds of things would make sparkles on your face? Like, if you were lying outside in the sun? Sometimes I see planes go by and they're shiny, and sometimes the sun makes sparkles on them. But when I try lying in the yard when planes pass overhead, they don't make sparkles on me."
"You mean like light reflecting and making sparkles?"
"Yes."
He thought about it for a moment.
"Well, when a mirror catches the sun, it causes flashes. Metal or crystal wind chimes outside in the sun when the wind blows might have reflections coming off them. And water in the sun has sparkles."
Bay nodded, eager to try them out.
"Those are good ideas, thank you."
He smiled.
"You're welcome."
Sydney walked out at that moment, and Tyler stopped the swing so suddenly that Bay had to hold on to the chain to keep from falling off. Her mother and Aunt Claire had that effect on people.
"Hi, Tyler," Sydney said, standing in front of the screen door.
She looked back into the house, unsure.
Claire said she didn't want to see you."
Tyler stood, which set Bay swinging again.
"I knew it. I scared her."
"What did you do?" Sydney demanded in the voice she used when Bay tried to cut her own hair once. Tyler looked down at his feet.
"I kissed her."
Sydney suddenly laughed, but then covered her mouth with her hand when Tyler's head shot up.
"I'm sorry, but that's all?"
Sydney walked over and patted his arm.
Let me talk to her, okay? If you knock, she won't answer. Let her act like Queen Elizabeth for a while. It'll make her feel better. Sidney gestured for Bay to get off the swing, and they all walked down the steps together.
A kiss, huh?
It was some kiss. Sidney put her arm around Bay. I didn't know she had it in her. Tyler said goodbye to them when they reached his house.
I did.
Is Claire upset about something?
Bay asked as they turned the corner.
She forgot where to put the everyday silverware this morning. I had to show her.
It worried her a little, Claire not knowing where things went. If only Bay could get the dream just right, then everything would be fine. She's not upset, honey. She just doesn't like when she can't control things. Some people don't know how to fall in love, like not knowing how to swim. They panic first when they jump in. Then they figure it out.
Do you?
Bay plucked a blade of grass out of a crack in the sidewalk and tried to blow on it through her fingers to make it whistle like her new friend Dakota had shown her on the 4th of July.
Do I know how to fall in love? Sidney asked, and Bay nodded.
Yes, I suppose I do.
I've already fallen in love.
You have you?
Yes, with our house.
You get more like Claire every day, Sidney said, as they finally stopped in front of a long red brick building.
Well, there it is. Your Aunt Claire and I went here.
My grandmother never liked to leave the house much, but she would walk me to school every day.
I remember that. It's a good place.
Bay looked at the building. She knew where her classroom was going to be, through the door and down the hall, the third door on the left. She even knew what it smelled like construction paper and carpet cleaner. She nodded.
It's the right place.
Yes, Sidney said. Yes, it is.
So,
are you excited about school?
It's going to be good. Dakota belongs in my class.
Who's Dakota?
A boy I met on the 4th of July.
Oh, well, I'm glad you're making friends. That's one thing I wish now that Claire had done, Sidney said. Sidney talked a lot about Claire these days, and there were times when Sidney and Claire were together that Bay could see, in just the right light, them turn into little girls again, like they were living life over.
You should make friends too, Mommy.
Don't worry about me, honey. Sidney put her arm around Bay's shoulder and pulled her close as the scent of David's cologne floated by on the wind. It made Bay afraid for a moment, not for herself, but for her mother. It was never Bay her father wanted anyway.
We're close to downtown. Let's go by Fred's and get some Pop-Tarts, Sidney said brightly, in that voice adults always used to try to distract kids from what was really going on.
And you know what I'd really like? Cheetos. I haven't had Cheetos in a long time. Don't tell Claire, though. She'll try to make some herself.
Bay didn't argue. Pop-Tarts were good, after all. And she liked them better than her father.
When they reached Fred's, they walked in and Sidney took a basket by the door. They had just passed the produce section when there was a crash. Suddenly, there were hundreds of oranges rolling everywhere, into the bread section, under people's carts, and Bay could almost hear them laughing like they were suddenly struck with the joy of freedom. The produce man and a couple of bag boys appeared like the ball catchers at tennis games, as if they'd been crouching nearby, waiting for such a thing to happen. The culprit was standing by the now-empty orange display, not looking at what he had done, but staring straight at Sidney. It was Henry Hopkins, the man who'd given them ice cream, then sat on their blanket on the 4th. They liked him. He was still, like Claire. Steadfast. Not taking his eyes off Sidney, he walked over to her. "Hi, Sidney."
"Hi, Bay," he said.
Sidney pointed to the oranges.
"You know we impress easily. You didn't have to do this to get our attention."
"Here's a secret about men. Our foolishness is always unintentional. But It's usually for a good reason. He shook his head. I sound like my granddad. It's all don't take any wooden nickels from here. Sidney laughed. Bay and I are on a Pop-Tart run. It must be a sweet tooth kind of day. A couple of weeks ago, Evenell brought my granddad a jar of maraschino cherries. He saw them yesterday and said, why not make more ice cream and have banana splits? The only thing we were lacking was the hot fudge, so I took off early today to get it. Sweet stuff is definitely worth the extra trip, Sidney said. Why don't you come out? Are you busy? There'll be plenty of banana splits. And I could show Bay around. She could see the cows. Bay's mind cleared, like the sun peeking through clouds.
Let's go see the cows,
Bay said enthusiastically, trying to get her mother in on it. Cows are great! Sidney looked at her, puzzled. First plains, and now cows. Since when did you get to be such a cow lover?
Don't you like cows? Bay asked.
I'm indifferent to cows, Sidney said, then turned to Henry. We walked here. We don't have a way out there. I can take you, Henry offered. Bay tugged on her mother's shirt.
Didn't she see how calm she was around him? How their hearts were beating in rhythm? The pulses at their throats were in sync. Please, Mommy?
Sidney looked from Bay to Henry. Looks like I'm outnumbered. Great. I'll meet you at the checkout, Henry said, and walked away. Okay, Dairy Queen, what gives? Sidney asked.
Don't you see it?
Bay said, excited. See what?
He likes you, like Tyler likes Claire.
Maybe not quite that way, honey. He's my friend. Bay frowned. This was going to be harder than she thought. Usually, things fell into place a lot easier when Bay pointed out where they belonged. She really had to figure out how to reproduce her dream exactly in real life. Nothing was going to be exactly right until she did. It was even now keeping her mother from realizing what was perfect for her. They met Henry in front, and he showed them to his cool silver truck. It was a king cab, and Bay got to sit in the back, which she liked because it was so improbable to be sitting in the back seat of a truck without actually being in the bed. The day turned out to be absolutely wonderful. Henry and his grandfather seemed more like brothers, and Bay liked their calm sense of themselves. Sidney liked it too, Bay could tell. Old Mr. Hopkins, upon first seeing Sidney, asked her when her birthday was. When he discovered that she was exactly 5 months and 15 days older than Henry, he laughed and clapped his grandson on his back and said, "Oh, well, that's all right, then." The more Bay saw, and the more she knew of Henry and his grandfather, the more she was certain. This was the place. This was where her mother belonged. But Sidney didn't know it. Her mother, she realized, had always had a problem knowing where she went. Lucky for her, that was Bay's specialty. As Sidney carried Bay up the front steps late that evening, she felt good. While Lester and Bay manned the electric ice cream maker by the chestnut tree in the front yard that afternoon, Sidney and Henry had walked around the field and talked, mostly of old things, elementary school and former teachers. Henry drove them home after dark, and Bay fell asleep in the back. When Henry pulled in front of the house, he cut the engine, and they talked some more. About new things this time. Where they wanted to go with their lives, what they thought the future might be like. Sidney didn't tell Henry anything about the stealing she'd done, or about David. It was almost as if they didn't exist. She liked that feeling. Denial was a luxury, especially with that memory of David floating around, his cloying cologne not letting her forget. But she could forget with Henry. She talked herself hoarse, sitting there in his truck. Before she knew it, it was midnight. She'd just entered the house, Bay in her arms, when Claire appeared in her nightgown.
Where have you been?
We met Henry Hopkins at the grocery store. He invited us to his place for banana splits, Sidney said. She took a good look at Claire, and her heart suddenly lurched in fright. Claire's face was pinched and her hands were clasped tightly in front of her, as if she had terrible news. Oh, God. It was David. David had found them. She took a deep breath, trying to smell him. Why? What happened? What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong.
Claire wrung her hands for a moment. Then she turned and headed to the kitchen.
You just should have called me to let me know.
Sydney followed, clutching Bay to her now. By the time she caught up with her, Claire had already walked through the kitchen and was in the sunroom, putting on her gardening clogs.
That's all?
Sydney said breathlessly.
That's it?
I was worried. I thought...
What?
What did you think happened? Sydney asked, scared because she'd never seen Claire like this. It had to be something horrible.
I thought you left, Claire said softly.
Sydney couldn't quite get her mind around it.
You're upset because you thought we left?
You mean for good?
If you need me, I'll be in the garden. I'm sorry I worried you. I should have called. I was wrong.
Sydney was nearly out of breath with all the oxygen Claire's frustration was consuming in the enclosed sunroom.
Claire, I told you. We're not going anywhere.
I'm sorry.
It's okay, Claire said,
pushing open the sunroom door and leaving a smoldering brown imprint of her hand on the casing. Sydney watched Claire cross the driveway and unlock the garden gate. When she disappeared into the garden, Sydney turned and went back into the kitchen. There were cupcakes spread out over the countertops. They each had X marks the spot symbols and tiny cards with riddles printed on them, held up by toothpicks. Sydney walked closer to read them. You think there's nothing, but no cause for alarm. Dig deep and you will find your charm. Who knows what the future brings? Maybe a broken heart, maybe a diamond ring. Have no money in order to join? Dig right here and you'll find a coin. And for the ones that didn't have anything inside, she'd written a very telling riddle. No gift, no luck, no play, no toys. Don't dig here, you'll find a void. Sydney was thoughtful for a moment. Then she went to the storeroom and sat at Claire's desk with Bay cuddled in her lap. She reached for the phone. Chapter 10. Like every person who had ever fallen in love, Tyler Hughes wondered what in the hell was wrong with him. Claire had all this energy, this frustration, and it came out of her and surged through him when they kissed. Every time he thought of it now, he had to sit down and put his head between his legs, and when he finally caught his breath, he had to drink 2 full glasses of water to cool his fever. But what made him lightheaded and change the color of every room he entered to bright, fantastic red had scared Claire to tears. What was wrong with him that he could take so much pleasure from the same thing that caused her so much pain? He was doing what he'd always done, making up his own agenda under the guise of it being romantic, carrying it through, and all the while losing track of what was real. Claire was real, and Claire was scared. What did he really know about her anyway? What did anyone really know about Claire Waverly? That afternoon, he had been sitting at his desk in Kingsley Hall during office hours before his night class, thinking of that very thing when he saw Anna Chapel, the head of the department, pass by. He called to her, and she popped her head in. "How well do you know Claire Waverly?" he'd asked. "Claire?" Anna shrugged and leaned against the door jamb. "Let's see. I've known her for about 5 years now. She caters all our department parties." "I mean personally, how well do you know her?" Anna smiled in understanding. "Ah, well, personally, I don't know her well. You've been here a year. I'm sure you've noticed certain peculiarities in this town." Tyler leaned forward, curious to know where this was going. "I've noticed." Local legend is important here, as it is with most small towns. Ursula Harris in the English department teaches a course on this. Anna walked farther in and took a seat opposite him. For example, I was sitting in the movie theater last year, and two elderly ladies came in and sat behind me. They were talking about someone named Phineas Young and how he was the strongest man in town, and he was going to tear down a rock wall at the back of their property for them. I'd been looking for someone to remove some stumps in my backyard, so I turned around and asked them if I could have his number. They told me he had a waiting list, and he might not live long enough to get to me. It turns out that the strongest man in town is 91 years old. But local legend has it that in every generation of Youngs, there's always one named Phineas who was born with superior strength, and that's who you want to help you with hard labor.
What does this have to do with Claire?
Locals believe that what's grown in the Waverleys' garden has certain powers. And the Waverleys have an apple tree that is talked about in almost mythic proportions around here. But it's just a garden, and it's just an apple tree. Claire is mysterious because all her ancestors were mysterious. She's really just like you and me. She's probably even more savvy than the average person. After all, she was smart enough to turn that local legend into a lucrative business. There was probably some truth to what Anna was saying, but Tyler couldn't help but remember how, when he was young, every year on January 17th, it snowed on their colony in Connecticut. There was no meteorological explanation, but legend had it that a beautiful Indian maid, a daughter of winter, had died on that day, and every year since, the sky wept cold snowy tears for her. And as a boy, it was a fact that if you caught exactly 20 fireflies in a jar, then let them all out before you went to bed, you'd sleep through the night without bad dreams. Some things couldn't be explained. Some things could. Sometimes you liked the explanation, sometimes you didn't. That's when you called it myth. I get the feeling this isn't what you wanted to know, Anna said. Tyler smiled. Not exactly. Well, I know she's not married, and I know she has a half-sister. Half-sister? Tyler said with interest. They have different fathers, from what I've heard. Their mother was a little wild. She left town, had kids, brought the kids here, then left again. I take it you're interested in Claire?
Yes, Tyler said.
Well, good luck, Anna said as she stood. But don't mess it up. I don't want to have to find someone else to work our department parties just because you broke our caterer's heart. At home late that night, Tyler sat on his couch in his shorts and a short-sleeved button-down shirt, trying to focus on the class line-drawing assignments, but he kept thinking about Claire. Anna didn't know Claire. No one really knew Claire. As a matter of fact, Sidney was probably the only person who could give him any insight into the woman who wouldn't leave his thoughts since the moment he first spoke to her. Sidney said she'd talk to Claire, so he'd wait to hear from her. Or maybe he would call Sidney in the morning and talk about Claire. Or stop by the white door tomorrow. The phone rang, and he reached over to where he'd set the portable, on the coffee table. Hello?
Tyler, it's Sidney.
Whoa, Tyler said, sitting back on the couch. I was just hoping you'd call.
It's Claire,
Sidney said in a soft voice.
She's out in the garden. The gate is unlocked. You might want to come over.
She doesn't want me over there. He hesitated. Does she?
But I think she might need you. I've never seen her like this.
Like what?
She's like a live wire. She's actually singeing things.
He remembered the feeling. I'll be right over. He walked across the yard and around the Waverley home to the back garden. Like Sidney said, the gate was unlocked, and he pushed it open. He was immediately met with the scent of warm mint and rosemary, as if he'd walked into a kitchen with herbs simmering on the stove.
The footpath lamps looked like small runway lights, and they cast a yellowy glow over the garden. The apple tree was a dim figure at the back of the lot, shivering slightly, like the way a cat's fur crawls in its sleep. He found Claire in the herb patch, and the image stopped him short. Her short hair was pulled back with that white headband. She was on her knees in a long white nightgown that had straps over the shoulders and a ruffle at the hem. He could make out the sway of her breasts as she picked at the ground with a hand rake. All of a sudden he had to bend over and put his hands on his knees, taking deep breaths. Sidney was right. He was hopeless. When he finally felt he could stand without passing out, he slowly walked over to Claire, not wanting to startle her. He was almost next to her when she finally stopped raking around the plants. The leaves of some were dark, as if burned. More still looked wilted, as if they'd been exposed to something hot. She turned her head and looked up at him. Her eyes were red. Good God, she was crying? Tears did him in. All his students knew it. All it took was one tear from a freshman who had too much homework and couldn't complete her assignment for him, and he was giving her an extension and offering to talk to her other professors for her. She winced when she saw him and looked away. Go away, Tyler. What's wrong? Nothing is wrong, she said tersely, clawing the dirt with her hand rake again. Please don't cry. What does it matter to you? This has nothing to do with you. I'm making it something to do with me. I hit my thumb. It hurt. Ouch. Sidney wouldn't have called me if this was just about a sore thumb. That did it. That pushed a button. Her head jerked around. She called you? She said you were upset. She seemed to struggle with the words at first, but she got over that pretty quickly. I can't believe she called you. Will it ease her conscience if she knows you'll be here for me when she goes? You'll leave too. Doesn't she know that? No, she doesn't know that because she always does the leaving. She never gets left. She's leaving? Tyler asked, confused. I'm leaving? Claire's lips were trembling. You all leave. My mother, my grandmother, Sidney, even Al has someone else now. First of all, I'm not going anywhere. Second, where is Sidney going? Claire turned away again. I don't know. I'm just afraid she is. She likes things that don't go away, Sidney had told him that. This woman had been abandoned too many times to let anyone in again. The epiphany brought him to his knees. His legs literally gave out from under him. So many things about her made sense now. He'd lived next door to the Waverly House long enough to know that maybe there was some merit to local legend, but Anna was right about one thing. Claire was like everyone else. She hurt just like everyone else. Oh, Claire. He was beside her now, both on their knees. Don't look at me like that. I can't help it, he said, reaching out to touch her hair. He expected her to pull away. But to his surprise, she leaned into his hand slightly, her eyes closed, looking so vulnerable. He inched forward, lifting his other hand to her hair, now cupping her head. Their knees touched, and she leaned forward to rest her head on his shoulder. Her hair was so soft. He ran his fingers through it, then he touched her shoulders. She was soft everywhere. He rubbed her back, trying to give her some comfort, but not knowing exactly what she needed. After a moment, Claire pulled back and looked at him. Her eyes were still wet with tears, and he used his thumbs to wipe her cheeks. She lifted her hands to his face, touching him like he touched her. Her fingers outlined his lips, and he could only watch as if he were outside himself as she leaned in to kiss him. This would be a stupid time to faint, he told himself. Then she ended the kiss, and he returned to his body and thought, no! He followed her as she pulled back, his lips finding hers. Minutes passed like this, hearts beating harder, their hands going everywhere. At one point he had to tell himself this was about her, not him, about her pain, not his pleasure. But she wasn't exactly complaining, he thought, on a wince as she bit his bottom lip. "Tell me to stop," he said. "Don't stop," she whispered back, kissing down his neck. "Make it better." She worked at the buttons of his shirt, her fingers shaking, clumsy. Finally, she had his shirt open, and her hands touched his chest, sliding around to his back. She hugged him, putting her cheek over his heart. His skin tightened, and air hissed through his teeth at the contact. It almost hurt, but it felt so good, that energy, that hot frustration seeping through his skin. There was too much of it, though, and he couldn't absorb it all. This was probably going to kill him, he thought drunkenly. But it was a hell of a way to die. He shrugged out of his shirt, but she didn't let go. He finally pulled her up so he could kiss her again. She pushed, and he fell on his back to the ground, but they never broke the kiss. He was lying on some herb, thyme maybe, and his weight was crushing it, its scent exploding around him. This all was faintly familiar to him somehow, but he couldn't quite place it. Claire finally pulled up for a breath. She was straddling him, her hands flat against his chest, sending erotic pulses into him. Tears were still running down her cheeks. "God, please don't cry. Please, I'll do anything." "Anything?" she asked. "Yes." "Will you not remember this tomorrow? Will you forget everything tomorrow?" He hesitated. "Are you asking me to?" "Yes." "Then, yes." She pulled her gown over her head, and suddenly it was hard to breathe again. His hands went up to touch her breasts, and she cried out at the surge.